On the agenda today, we have going over Sandro's second set of feedback for the syntax spec, this vocab issue with vocab taking precedence over compact IRIs when compacting, Sandro Hawk's JSON-LD API spec review, Issei Wu's JSON-LD API spec review, and Sandro's data round-tripping concerns. Are there any additions or changes to the agenda? Nicholas?
Yes. I think that I'll have to leave early. Is it possible to take the vocab thing first?
Sure.
And also, I don't know if it's even feasible to consider, but I was looking at the syntax. We cannot change syntax, I believe, but the piece where we say that a term has a type of vocab, you know, because ID doesn't support terms as values.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if we could discuss if it would look better if it was type context, because type vocab, when I tried it out, looked very strange in some examples.
Yeah, we should discuss it since that's new. But
just quickly time box that so we don't.
Okay, really quick. Really quick, we have we launched the Paceworm, the first commercial implementation of Paceworm. That's relevant because it is built on top of JSON-LD. So the entire financial protocol is kind of powered by JSON-LD. So that's good. It's in production. There's real money flowing through it. So hopefully we did a good job at designing JSON-LD and there isn't some horrible thing waiting for us in the spec. Anyway, so there we go. That's that.
No, great. I just recalled that I should say that I am from now on an employee of the National Library of Sweden, and since they want me to do stuff like this, I represent them now. I'm just not myself.
Okay. That sounds good. You might want to change your status on the community group.
Oh, yeah.
If you're
good point.
Representing them.
Yes.
And we'll have to talk about RDFA, but
That
probably won't change.
No, I think Yvonne said that was okay, but we should. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. First up is issue 235, letting vocab take precedence over compact IRIs. Let me get the link to that. Okay, so vocab, I guess go ahead, Nicholas, since you're the one that's most familiar with this.
Yes, let's see if I can get the link up. Basically it's the fact that when compacting, even if a vocab is defined in the context, if there is a QRI, if there is a prefix defined with the same value, it will take precedence. Therefore, if you have defined a certain amount of prefixes, perhaps you inherit the default context somewhere which has this prefix defined, you will not get simple terms out, even if you have the vocab set to something. First off, I think that intuitively it should behave like that, and that also reflects how the default prefix behaves when you serialize turtles, at least in RDFlib and certain other serializations I've seen. Second, in principle, I think that it should be take precedence because the purpose of compaction is to make things as small as possible. And third is that although it could be debated that you shouldn't define a prefix with the same value as vocab, and it's a sloppy context management not to take care of that, in practice I think that it would be sometimes unexpected if this behavior was the default, because sometimes you have a lot of prefixes and it's hard to curate them all the time and make sure that it, if you add a vocab for compaction, you have to null the prefix, and you might have reused the prefix in certain declarations, and so on and so forth. So I think that in practice it, this could cause strange behavior, and I cannot really see any downside to vocab taking precedence in this case. If you don't want the vocab to be used in compaction, it's a single thing that you should take care of setting to null. That's my basic opinion.
Okay, and I know Dave Longley and Marcus had comments on this too. Dave, I can describe for you if you want to kind of put your comments in.
Yeah, sure. in the issue tracker, I tried to break out some of the reasons why you might combine both vocab and prefix, and it seems like the one that's going to produce the most unexpected behavior is when you're essentially inheriting from previous contexts that might have a prefix defined in there, and you want to add vocab. Effectively, from what I could tell, the only reason that you would ever have add vocab and a prefix both pointing at the same IRI was when you wanted to either properly expand terms in the data that weren't defined, and that's why you added add vocab, or you wanted to compact to those terms, or if you wanted to properly expand queries in the data so that they weren't confused with absolute IRIs. It seems to me that if you're adding add vocab to try and catch terms that haven't been defined, then you're probably using a context that has a lot of prefixes defined, and it wouldn't be too difficult for you to simply add another context if you wanted to compact and not have any not use vocab. You just add another context and set vocab to null. That's a fairly easy thing for you to do to make compaction work the way you want to, because in that use case you probably haven't defined, you probably haven't created term definitions that use vocab terms in the ID position. That is legal for you to do in the context, but you probably didn't do that in that case, since you're just trying to catch terms that you haven't defined in the JSON data, and you want to actually output them using prefixes, since since we're talking about how would you make this work if you wanted the queries in the output, you probably didn't use add vocab in the context to really define anything. So it's really easy to just say add vocab's null to get the compaction results you want that has queries. Now if you're going the other direction where you want to get where you want to use that vocab to do compaction and you don't want queries in the output, it's been suggested by Nicholas, and I think he's probably right, that you're much more likely to have used queries in the context or in a previous context that you've inherited from, just within the context. And since you've done that in the case where you want to use vocab to compact the terms and you don't want queries in the output, it's going to be a lot more complicated for you to be able to get that out, to get the output you want, because you have to go through and undefine all of the prefixes. And if you undefine all the prefixes that are interrelated with one another, you have to recreate all the term definitions that you want for collections and sets and type coercion. As far as I can tell, that will actually be the more common case for people that are using add vocab that actually want to compact using it. And if there's no other use cases and no other reason that anyone else can see that deciding to give preference for add vocab over queries, if no one has any objections to that, I don't have any objections to it either. It seems like it would be a better way to do it, because it seems like the more common case. Sorry if I rambled a bit.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just can easily imagine a number of cases when you're transforming RDFA over where you are, of course, getting an initial context, which does say define schema as a prefix. And also the document you're using uses schemas of vocab, since we actually use that in a number of examples. So if you were to do something without trying to have a lot of hand massaging in the way, then you would end up in precisely this case where vocab was there certainly in order to allow the use of terms in the RDFA. However, when you use a constructed context and compact the resulting JSON-LD, you no longer get that effect. So preferring vocab makes sense. Now, that said, if a query is more like a term in that it has, say, default language or types associated with it, then I think we have to continue to use that because that allows for the most compact representation of the values. But again, that's really more like having a term which has the form of a query.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Essentially, you have defined a term at that point, and it falls under the same term rules rather than the query rules.
Yeah.
I think that the effect of compaction, that this change that was suggested wouldn't crop up, wouldn't end up making that behavior affecting that, so.
Marcus, did you have input to the contrary here?
I'm reading your comment, and it seems a bit like you're arguing for the opposite.
No. I just I tested it, I modified my implementation, and there is only one test case that needs to be changed. So it's really, well, it's a trivial change, and I would support it.
Okay, so it sounds like there's pretty broad agreement for us to make this change. Does anyone disagree? Okay, so is this just for compaction?
Yes. That is, if it weren't, if someone changed the expansion, you would never be able to expand QRIs or something. That would be bad.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so when compacting IRIs, vocab should take precedence over queries. Is that clear enough, or do we want something different? Nicholas, do you have any alternate suggestion?
No, I think the headline, the title of the issue was "Let vocab take precedence over compact IRIs in compaction." Maybe
okay,
that's
so when compacting IRIs, vocab should take precedence over compact IRIs.
Yeah, if we wanted to be more clear, we could just simply say this reverses the previous order of precedence.
Okay. There's the proposal.
I suggested some text in the issue if someone wants to start off with that. I don't know if it's following the style of the spec, but I hope it's a start.
Okay, thanks. All right, that is that. There's the other issue that we wanted to time box, Nicholas, which is using at context instead of at vocab when you do type.
Right. Let me see if I have some good example. Right now, if in the content of your document you want to have a syntactic expression like this, perhaps, and the value there is a term which is defined either. Well, you want it to be looked up in the context. Either you will find a defined term for it in the context and expand it, or you want to resolve it against the vocab, or you want to expand the QRI value to something. Then our recent solution was, I believe, that we want to use this declaration in the context. And I wonder if it's more intuitive to write this instead, given that it only resolves against vocab in one of the cases. So the broader logic is resolve this against the context, otherwise use it as an absolute IRI.
So I think that type vocab is definitely not ideal. I don't think that type context is better. I mean, it's almost as if instead of type vocab, we should have had like at lookup colon at context. Maybe that would have been clearer. But again, that fights against our desire to kind of keep the number of keywords low.
Yeah, I originally wanted something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But given the two evils, I wonder if context is a little bit more intuitive.
Anyone else want to chime in?
It's 1 minute to midnight.
Yeah, I know. At least it's not 1 minute past.
Yeah, I don't really see that one is more compelling than the other, frankly. They're both rather unfortunate, I'd say. But I think it's, you know, we really have to be raising the bar on making changes, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, this was just, I mean, this doesn't change any logic or anything. It's just that, I mean, intuitively, if you read the context or want to explain this behavior, because I think that this is a good feature, and it's good that it's explicit, but
I think part of the confusion is that the meaning of that vocab is being overloaded. If I were to look at this and see at context, I think I would actually be more confused. I can see how you can look at it if it says at type at vocab and think, oh, that only means that whatever's in the at vocab position in the context will be used. But the other way to think about it is you're just saying that the type of data is a vocabulary term. That doesn't mean that it has to be, that it has to specifically be have the IRI that is used as at vocab as its base. But rather, we have two different meanings for at vocab. One of them is to say what the default vocab is when at vocab is used just plainly in the context. And when you're using type coercion, at vocab takes on a slightly different meaning, which is you're saying the type of data that goes in this position or that goes with this term is a vocabulary thing. And a vocabulary thing means anything in the context. I think if we say the type is a type of context, I find that more confusing because I would expect a context to appear in the data there and then have that mean something.
Yeah, I do agree with Dave on this.
Well, I thought about that too, but I think that we're sort of in the middle of our thought process, sort of jump there, and when we see type context, because we haven't seen it before, we think ID context or something like that. So the association gets conflated in at least my mind, because I thought of that. But then I thought, when I did the same explanation to myself, which is a bad way of discussing things, I reasoned like Dave, but I continuously, like Dave said, the value is looked up in the context. And I said context more than I said vocab, and therefore I was wondering if someone who has never seen this before would actually find it easier to understand it if we said type context. But, well...
Yeah, unfortunately that is a question that we're only going to be able to answer in hindsight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be end up being easier for us to explain that ad vocab has two different meanings based on where it appears in the context than explaining that at type now means lookup and at context fits in with at type. We're either going to overload what at type means to try and get the explanation right, or we're going to overload what the value of at type is to try and get the explanation right. And I think I would rather overload the value of... I'd rather overload the value versus at type. We already overload at type for data type and just regular type.
Yeah, that's true. The overloading of type in the context is fairly radical. But, I mean, if you see type at ID, if we didn't have that before and we introduced it now and said tap, type at ID, wouldn't we come to the conclusion that we thought that we mean, oh, is the value the IRI of the subject, and that's it's not, because that's what aliasing is for. I'm just trying to, you know, flip this in certain, rotate this, because we have few people outside of our group who are able to quickly answer it.
Right. Can you say what we might confuse it with again? Just so I can run that through my head.
If you looked at, if you had said category or something else, a better term maybe, and you said at type colon at ID.
Then I might, instead of thinking that the type is an IRI, I might think that it is what exactly?
Well, we can't think of anything else before because we're trained in this, but perhaps you would make the same assumption as we think that people might do when we say type at context, that the value should be something else, giving an ID of something.
You could also make that as an alias for at context, which we otherwise don't support, for example.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
If you type course it to that context, someone could also think that that's a way to alias at context, for example, because you normally can't alias at context in JSON-LD.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I can't decide either way. Maybe we should just train ourselves and document and explain how type vocab works. I can certainly follow Dave's reasoning.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to explain something because neither solution is perfect, but it does seem to me like explaining that at vocab just has a different meaning based on where it appears in the context versus at type now also has a different meaning is more, I feel like there's more to explain if we put at context in there, even though I understand where you're coming from for why you want to put it there. But it seems more like we need even more keywords to explain that away versus just at vocab has two different meanings, the default vocabulary or an indication that the type of value is a vocabulary term.
Yeah.
Paul, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in. I know y'all are so into it, and I'm a little bit more of an outsider and newcomer here. As such, I do think the at vocab is easier to understand just from listening to the discussions. It came across as easier to, maybe that type of overloading. You're already kind of used to a little bit of it. So, I think that one's a little bit easier for an incomer.
That's what I needed to hear then, because That's, I withdraw any proposal here.
Okay, yeah, that was very helpful, Paul. Okay, good. So it sounds like we're not making any change, and we can move on from this. I don't think we need to resolve anything since there's no change.
No, that's
other
true.
Than, yeah, other than closing the issue. Okay. All right, those two things. Jumping back up to the beginning of the agenda, we have issue 224. This is Sandro's feedback. He came back with even more feedback for Marcus. Marcus, we do need to. We're going to try and get through as much of this feedback as possible today. Would we be able to? Is there much that needs to be dealt with in this in his set of responses? It seemed like you had it pretty much under control. Anything in particular we need to discuss?
Not really. Maybe the most critical thing is whether we normatively reference RDF concepts and RDF schema, which is also discussed in tomorrow's RDF working group, so maybe we should discuss that today here. The rest is the feedback for the API spec. I just sent out an email to propose to close that issue because Sandro already said he's happy with the changes I implemented, and the only remaining thing there is the data round-tripping stuff, where we have that canonical lexical form, which we either require or we say that an implementation is free to output any valid XSD integer, for example.
Okay. Hold on 1 second. I'm just talking about issue 224. We will definitely discuss the other issues, and it is helpful to hear that where we are across all those issues.
Oh, sorry. I was talking about specific... the API spec.
Okay. So the syntax spec, he came back with updates to the syntax spec, right? And you made a number of changes to it?
Yes.
And it really seemed like the vast majority of this stuff was editorial. Is there anything that you don't think was editorial?
Just a second. Looking through it right now. No, I think it was more or less just editorial, or the rest was just not clear enough, and that has been fixed already. So I'm probably going to send an email to Sandra later asking him whether everything has been addressed, because I think it has.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so that's issue 224.
There are a couple of checkboxes that haven't been checked. I don't know if those, is that just cleanup stuff or?
That's something which I think we shouldn't change. And also, I already explained in some emails why I think we shouldn't change that, and I just need Sandra's okay for that, or him saying that we really should change it. But I think there is no change required, and that's the reason why I didn't check it out.
The only one, this is Paul, the only one that I see that might be of interest is there's a medium that says, okay, this overloading of at keywords goes too far with at vocab, serving a completely different purpose from normal at vocab in this situation. That's just silly. Okay, that's the one that kind of caught my eye.
Yep,
that's one we already discussed in the past, and we
So I just wanted to make sure that that's the only one that I wanted to make sure that we were still in agreement there.
Yeah, good point, and I think we are. I think the position of this group has basically solidified. You were very, very sure about the terms that we're overloading now, or rather the keywords whose meaning we overload in specific instances. We've made some trade-offs to do that, and we're not entirely comfortable with it, but I don't think we're going to end up changing it at this point. Or rather, we need some really good feedback, or a lot of people saying that it's too confusing, or we need to see people making some pretty hideous mistakes for us to kind of backtrack on that decision.
Okay. Again, just crossing I's and dotting T's.
Yep, no, it's good spotting. Okay, next up is issue 234, Sandra's JSON-LD API spec review. This is issue 234. Marcus, do you mind, since you responded to him?
Yeah, that's, again, mostly editorial. Sandra didn't review the algorithms itself, but had a number of other comments, which I addressed already, and Sandra already agreed that we can close this issue. The only thing that's remaining from that feedback was the data round-tripping section, and I split that out in a separate issue so that we can discuss it there more focused, because there is really a lot of stuff in that feedback.
Okay. And I guess you're going to ask Sandro if it's okay to close this issue?
Yeah, I did already, and I just sent out an email 10 minutes ago with our normal 24 hours notification.
Okay, great. Okay, then next up is issue 236, JWoo's JSON-LD API spec review, and this was a strange review. He basically didn't review the algorithms either because he found them too complicated to read through, and he asked us to reorganize the document pretty heavily. And I think at this point was just no, we're not. I don't think it's a good idea, and it doesn't sound like, we should definitely hear back from the group right now whether people would want to reorganize the algorithms, but I think that would be a disaster, and it would just take an insane amount of time, and I don't necessarily understand what that buys us. I think in theory what he's asking for sounds good, but we have to remember that we attempted to do what he wanted earlier, and we... are where we are at with the API spec today because that previous attempt didn't work out as well, or we ended up making changes that we felt were easier to read that resulted in the spec we have today. So the only question is, what could we do to simplify the algorithms in the API spec?
He didn't say that they are too complex. He said that they are too long.
Yeah. Well,
so it's kind of the same, but not really exactly the same.
Right. Yeah, that's true. In any case, but, I mean, I think that we're doing that for a reason. We want to be very explicit about what happens.
The comments I've gotten from my colleague that's been implementing the various algorithms, starting from before we had the split out to the alternate and then alternate two, he has said that the newer ones are much easier to follow and were actually quite a bit easier just to understand what was going on.
Okay.
That's, I think there's a certain stylistic issue in terms of what you see in programming as well, the thought of taking long algorithms and breaking them into method calls so that you have a method that doesn't take larger than, say, a screen or something like that. The RDF conversion perhaps exhibit that a little bit more, where they're sort of calling out to sort of sub-steps to do things that are encapsulated. And I took some of Zay's comments in that light, that some of the algorithms perhaps would be more useful if they were broken out into call-outs. I do take Marcus's point that might mean you're sort of going back and forth a little bit to understand things, but I guess that depends to a certain degree how good the abstraction of those sort of sub-algorithms would be. But I, I'll use the same razor I used before, as it's we're getting really close to the end, and I don't think that that represents a substantive change. It's really much more a stylistic issue, which is traditionally left to the purview of the editors. So I think my feeling is we should just leave well enough alone.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yeah, same here. Marcus, the rest seemed like they were very, very simple editorial changes. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I addressed all of them, and he didn't come back to me yet saying whether the changes were enough or whether he really, really wants the algorithms to be split into subparts. So I think we just have to wait for his reply.
While I do agree that like shorter algorithms are easier, I think one of the problems that you run into is you lose some of the context of where things are used because you're bouncing around. And this, I think we've struck a pretty good balance of things that are truly reusable. Type components between the different algorithms have their own section. That's great, but the majority of the algorithms themselves are straight through. I mean, as far as implementation, yes, an implementer is going to break them out into smaller methods. You're not going to have one great big 500 line long method that does this stuff, but that's an implementation detail, not an algorithmic detail.
Mm-hmm. Yep, agreed.
Yeah. The only other thing I think that we might want to discuss is that he raised the point saying that instead of having those string constants as error codes, he would prefer to have numbers. So, for example, 500 to say that a list of lists. We had that discussion already before with Robin, but I think it's too late to change that, I would say. I mean,
I'm a big minus one on that. I think that's sort of unnecessary, and it's sort of a hold back to more, I don't want to say ancient, but older programming styles. Yeah.
Well, that's because, you know, an integer took four bytes, right? And a string.
Yeah, I don't think we need to save bytes in order to at the expense of losing the meaning of things. We don't need to have this extra lookup for an integer. We don't need to have all that. We're not, you know, programming on a Commodore 64. We're good to go.
Yeah, I see your point, but on the other hand, string processing in some languages really does suck.
Well, there's the option is that an implementer can associate numerical values with those string values.
Right, and that's exactly what we've done. And that's exactly what we've done.
Yeah, I mean, there's no problem with anyone that needs to do it, or if they're writing some kind of embedded system and they need to use a small number of, you know, something really small, they can do that. But it's an implementation detail.
I mean, yeah, if it really comes down, if it really gets somebody's kind of really... the sticks in their craw, I mean, maybe like some sort of a editorial comment in there saying, hey, you know, it's up, you can do whatever you want in your code, but these are as far as how you handle them internally, but these are the external interfaces.
But, yeah, I don't really know that we need to do that, because otherwise
you'd have
to give hints everywhere about how you might actually implement this. I don't think that's the purpose of the spec.
Right. And that's kind of where my point I was getting at.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's that issue. Anything else on Jay's feedback before we move on?
No.
Okay. The final issue up today is Sandra's data round-tripping concerns.
That's basically he binds the whole section, data round-tripping, confusing. He doesn't really understand why it's there, why we rephrase the XSD specification, so why we explain how an integer looks like in canonical lexical form. He doesn't understand why we require implementations to output to convert those native types to canonical lexical form, so why we restrict it to that form. And if we do that, or if we keep that, why don't we just convert values in canonical lexical form to native types, so that in both directions we rely on that canonical lexical form? And the other question, which we didn't really discuss yet, was about the potential precision loss you have when you convert some XSD number to a JSON number, for example.
So I think, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish up and I'll comment.
So I think the question is here is if we want to keep that requirement that implementations produce output in canonical lexical form, or whether we relax that. And if we keep it, do we just convert numbers which are literals which are in canonical lexical form to native types? So I think those are the two questions.
So I think that the reason that we say this sort of thing in the spec is because if we don't say anything about it, people are going to be very surprised when their numbers all of a sudden start having rounding issues, or effectively, you know, they take their space probe and crash it into Mars because of a rounding error. Right. It's people need to understand that when they translate from one format to another, that there's a danger of the number not coming over correctly, and we need to also be very clear about what they need to do with those numbers to make sure that the data will round trip from RDF to JSON-LD and back to RDF, or even from JSON-LD to JSON-LD. So I think we have to have some spec text explaining this stuff in there.
But that's a different issue, I would say. Canonical lexical form has nothing to do with rounding errors.
It does have to do with testing, and testing becomes far more difficult if we don't specify this information as well.
That's true.
Yeah. So as far as canonical lexical form, I have to admit, I don't know if we're using the same definition when we're talking about that, but it seems to me that we should have a canonical lexical form in there. One for testing, and two, because I don't see the benefit of not specifying it at all. It seems like an interoperability issue if we don't specify it. Whereas if we do specify it, there's no interoperability issue. It's very clear. It's in the spec. I'm done. If anybody else has thoughts.
I guess the alternative would be to defer to either XSD or RDF where possible in the definition of the canonical lexical form. If that, or at least to say this is the same as, or as defined by, and with a restatement, so it's for convenience.
So Sandra's response when I said we do it to simplify testing was that he doesn't think that simplifying testing merits a must.
Well, I think the argument is we're doing this to ensure that implementations can interoperate.
Well,
right? If we
to achieve that, it would be enough to say it must be a valid XSD integer or a valid XSD double. And we don't have to kind of paraphrase the whole lexical representation.
Is the XSD spec very clear about that? I didn't think it was very clear about that.
Which spec, sorry?
XSD?
XSD, yeah.
Yeah, it's very clear about it.
About,
so for example, if you have a, if you have a double, the E for the exponent has to be uppercase, whereas JavaScript, for example, normally puts it in lowercase or the other way around, I can't remember. So there are just a few things, or there is, for example, no leading zeros are allowed or no trailing zeros. So it's those kind of things. But
Dave Longley, I feel like we looked at this at some point and came up with, and that's why the printf was the way it was in the spec. Maybe it was to match the XSD spec. I forget. Do you remember?
There was a specification where something was described in canonical lexical form, and we changed the spec to match up with that. I don't know if it was XSD or some RDF spec somewhere. But we definitely changed it from what it originally was, which was a lowercase c, which was more common in programming languages, and it was described using a simple printf, and we changed it to what it is now based on some specification. That probably tells us that we should have been referencing that specification, so we know that.
I do recall that there was an issue, a rounding issue. In Ruby, when we implemented it with like 14 or 15 or whatever, that was eliminated when we changed that. I don't recall though if what we used was exactly the same as XSD or not.
I think that print format we used previously was because in JSON the numbers don't have. Well, they have no dimensions or no value space defined. And we created that format to ensure that it is 64-bit or something, or 64, I think, bit.
Okay, so it sounds like we definitely need to say something about what the lexical form is. And I do agree that we should reference the XSD spec if it's very clear about it. And if it's not very clear about it, we need to be very clear about it. We need to reference some spec, and if we can't reference a spec, we need to be very clear about why we're not referencing that spec. But I think the bottom line is we shouldn't stay silent on it.
We are already referencing XML schema. So the only thing we are doing is we have a must statement in there, so implementations must use that canonical lexical form, even though that's just one form of one valid form for XSD integers, for example. And we are kind of paraphrasing that canonical lexical form in our spec, which we probably shouldn't do, at least according to Sandra.
Yeah, I'm looking at the XML schema part two, and it does define out quite a bit of the stuff pretty good detail. It's in the data types second edition.
Okay. All right.
That might be something for somebody to look at.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess the it sounds like what we're saying is let's go ahead and reference that spec, a spec, but specifically the it was XML schema data types.
XML schema part two data types.
Okay. So let's reference that spec and make sure that the output there matches kind of what we have in the spec, and let's not mention it. Let's not paraphrase. Let's just refer to the spec. But the bottom line is we do end up defining, we state very clearly what the lexical form is.
As I recall, this is what Concepts references, and we should clearly do the same thing. Here's the specific tag they're using. So we should be consistent with that. And in general,
yeah.
let that kind of work be done either by XML schema or RDF concepts.
Yep. Agreed.
So the question is still, do we require canonical lexical form, or is any valid XSD integer allowed?
We shouldn't restrict the input we process to be in canonical lexical form. No other RDF format does that. Purpose of that is to establish a base of, to which you can transform things that aren't in that form into a canonical form, which allows for a lexical comparison.
Mm-hmm.
What about output? So when we are converting JSON-LD to RDF?
Well, in my other RDF serializers, I have an option for canonicalization. But it's if that were always applied, then I would fail specs, because if typically I want to make sure that the lexical form I'm outputting is based upon the lexical form I'm inputting. Now, JSON, of course, has its own restrictions, because if we're dealing with numbers, that's sort of in a native representation and not a sort of a strictly lexical representation. So you're not going to be sure that the JSON you used as input will look exactly the same by some other output.
So as a question, are we talking about maintaining the kind of the mapping between the JSON data types and specific XML XSD types?
The only two types that we worry about are integer and double, right?
Right.
For native representations. So if someone creates a JSON document that uses 0-1, I believe that is legal JSON. But if I read it, at the point I see it, it's an integer. It's not the string 0-1. Therefore, I cannot reproduce the same lexical form in the output that I received. Now, if something's represented in string form, then certainly I would be able to do that, and I should.
Yeah, to be clear, we're not talking about changing the mapping between what we've chosen for native types in JSON and XSD. For a number in JSON, it's either going to be an XSD integer or an XSD double. We're not discussing changing that. We're just talking about the fact that if you do work with native types in JSON, you need a way to indicate, or at least we think that you should definitely tell implementations what the lexical form should look like if you convert that native number to a string. And I definitely think we need to do that for a whole variety of reasons, including most of which we've mentioned here.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, I just wanted to make sure that I was clear that in my mind what we were talking about here, that we're maintaining that this section maintains the mappings and such, even if we do say, hey, the definitions of what the mapping is in an external spec, which that's
yep.
Perfectly good to me.
The other question is whether or not we have a flag in the API. To use native types or specifically not use native types. I think it's important to be able to do that, because if we don't have that flag, it means that anything that's marked as an XSD integer or XSD double is just going to automatically be converted into a number, a JSON number in the programming language, and that can lead to rounding errors. So we need to be able to...
we are not defining an API for our dev conversion, so we don't need to define a flag there because there is no operation for that. We could, however, have such a flag in just the algorithm if we want to. But again, I don't really think that's necessary.
At one time we did.
We did, but we also had an API call before. Now we don't have that anymore.
Yeah, I think it's actually essential though that we have that part of the algorithm so that it's understood that if people are concerned about losing some kind of precision because they handle doubles differently outside of JSON and they don't want to convert it to a native type, they want to keep it as a string, we should at least show them that they can do that and that the algorithm isn't going to force them to convert to a native data type that's going to lose precision that might not be lost based on whatever system they're using just because they used XSD double.
What sort of impact would that have on since we are like the minute before midnight?
Well, I think step 4.6.7 is set value to the result of RDF to... Oh, that's not the one. There's a step in here that uses the value algorithm. And I believe that algorithm accepts such a flag. It did at one time anyway.
Yeah, it did. We have to do is revert a change that we made, and it's just another condition that says if the flag is set, which it will default to being true, change to native types. If the flag's not set, you don't do it. It shouldn't be a big change at all.
Okay.
And that makes it clear that if somebody implements the algorithm, then it's not going to destroy their data without them having to implement something different from what the algorithm does.
Are we doing the same for RDF type or for at least, for example?
I would be fine with putting the flags back in that we had before. Because I would expect the same thing does need to be done for at least RDF type. I think that changes the meaning of the data.
How do we test all those flags? I mean, at some point we need to test them as well, and every flag we introduce adds or requires new tests. And we already have no tests for the flags we have, so
yeah.
I'm a bit worried about introducing a lot of flags here.
Our
implementation can go ahead and add as many flags as it wants, but that's the basic algorithm here.
I think the only one we should concern ourselves with is the literal representation. The type thing I think was sort of an odd corner case, and I don't know that it really warrants being called out in this case. And then the other one was list representation. I don't recall what.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. Was that to preserve the linked list?
But I did not use the syntax. Yeah, I don't see a point in that.
Yeah, that doesn't change the meaning of the data.
I think it's more important is supporting lists of lists, which was, is that another issue on your list of things to talk about, Marcus?
Yeah, that's a feature at risk. So I put in that text that Sandra provided.
Okay, so I think we have one solid proposal then is to put this flag to convert or not convert from native types when doing the RDF conversion.
Yeah,
is that
then
right?
We have still to decide whether we require canonical lexical form or not, which was the thing we discussed initially.
Right, which I think we're saying that we should require canonical lexical form.
I might have missed something. I had to take a note elsewhere. Was this about removing any other flags from the description, or was it just specifying?
The flags have already been removed. It depends on what you mean by description. Flags were removed from both the API and the algorithms. The API, the flags were removed because the actual method calls were removed. But since we didn't have them in the method calls in the API, they were also removed from the algorithm text. Now we're talking about having to put at least one of those flags back in there, and that flag is the use native types flag on whether or not to use native types when doing RDF conversion. The other flag that we're not adding back in there, or seems like we're not adding back in there, is the what to use for RDF type when doing the conversion. Which I think, Nicholas, I'm bringing that up because I thought you were the main proponent behind that that flag.
Yeah. Well, also, there used to be a flag for not compacting to objects, even if there is only one member in a set.
I believe we still have that. It's the compact array flag. That doesn't change because we have an API with that flag. That should still be in the spec.
But RDF conversion isn't about compaction. Because the RDF conversion generates an expanded form.
Right.
Yes. Because I think that the RDF type is important because in RDF it is just a relation as anything else. And there are cases where you want to navigate the relations to types just as you want to navigate the relations to SCSS subjects from DC subject or other kinds of moves into vocabularies from instances. So I'm a bit wary about that one.
As I recall, the reason we had it was so that you could do some other mapping during compaction and or flattening.
There's nothing that
prevents you from navigating because you've got an IRI in the at type field, which can definitely relate to the same IRI elsewhere in the document. Used as a subject.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get at least some of these proposals down. The first proposal is to specify what canonical lexical form is for XSD integer and XSD double by referencing the XML schema 1.1 data types specification. And this is a required feature. Processors are required to use this canonical lexical form.
Yeah, when they're generating output, but the input doesn't have to match that. And also, I don't know if we need to make a note. Did we confirm that that's exactly the right spec with what we wanted to use that matches up with RDF concepts and everything?
I copied and pasted the tag from RDF concepts, but let me get the URL that it's referencing. There was an issue, as I recall, that there was some version differences in here. Hold on a second.
That was a different thing. That was RDF schema, not XML schema. But the other...
I just want to make sure whatever we're plus one-ing is the thing that we actually want to do. If we all understand that moving forward when we make the spec changes, that's fine.
I think it'll be clear. Even if it's wrong, I can put in a bit of text in the proposal or the proper spec. But I think we have agreement on what should be done. We just need to reference the correct spec and ensure that the text is correct in there, the value is correct.
The other argument against requiring the canonical lexical form is that currently all that to RDF conversion is completely abstract. So we just convert to the RDF abstract syntax. It's not a concrete syntax. That's done in the, well, in the test suite we use nquads. So I'm not really sure if requiring canonical lexical form in the spec is the right thing to do. You could, of course, do it for the test spec, for the test suite. But
and we can certainly add that as testing instructions, which we need many more things about how to run the tests anyway.
Yeah, so I think the right place to put that requirement would be in the test suite and not in the spec.
Wait, the canonical lexical form for XSC integer and XSC double?
Yes.
The requirement for outputting in canonical lexical form, as I understand it, is for testing purposes.
It's not just for testing. It's for any kind of interoperability. If you want two implementations to dump out the same document, you have to have that. Otherwise, they're not you don't have interoperability, right?
Well, we don't even specify a format that they should output, so it could be turtle and quads and triples. So there is no interoperability. The interoperability is in the abstract RDF syntax, which doesn't define a lexical form at all.
Well, what about two processors outputting JSON-LD?
Well, that's a JSON number.
So if you have a JSON number in, you put a JSON number out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in sort of a weird territory since we don't specify the serialization format for RDF, we shouldn't.
Okay, well, I'm feeling a bit uneasy about the interoperability implications of not saying anything.
Well, if when I'm doing JSON, if I'm testing JSON results, I have a result document, and I've got my output. They're both JSON. The way that I test is by parsing the JSON for each of them and determining whether they're equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really do a string comparison because you can't depend upon order. So it pretty much requires that you do that, and at that point it didn't matter what the lexical form was. The numbers are equivalent to the degree that my JSON parser conforms to the same that was used for output from the original document.
Okay, so the proposal then is do not specify what the canonical lexical form is for XSD integer, XSD double.
Yeah, I think it's not required for RDF because it's not a lexical output. And for JSON output, it's also basically an object form that's being output rather than a serialized JSON document.
Is this a problem when we're talking about converting JSON native numbers to a string in the algorithm? I mean, we're not specifying at all how to do that. I mean, we still need to specify how to do that, even if we don't talk about how what the serialization format for the RDF is. It seems odd to me because you're still doing a conversion of some kind.
But we could also say if the value is a valid XSD integer, convert it to a JSON number, for example. Or if the JSON number has no fractions, convert it to a valid XSD integer. And that's all we have to say, I think. Or actually, it's an RDF literal with a data type of XSD integer, something like that.
Yeah, but what's in the literal?
What do you mean?
Yeah, it seems like we should specify what the actual value of the literal is.
Because the literal or output has a lexical form even in... Does it have a lexical form in the abstract syntax?
I think the abstract syntax doesn't specify anything about lexical form, does it?
Well, it refers to XML schema.
Okay.
It has their data type map of the various data types that are included within there.
All right, so...
There is a description of a lexical form. So literals have a lexical form being a Unicode stream, which should be in normal form C. Let me see if I can point to the... So that we do need to worry about the lexical form of the value within any abstract representation.
Right. Yeah, I do think we need to specify this, even though it's abstract.
Literals are equal if and only if the two lexical forms,
right,
the two data type I arise, and the two language tags compare equal character by character.
Right, so for interoperability, we do need to specify this.
That literal equality.
Right, but that's still something that's specified in the abstract data model, right?
Yeah.
If you have a value in the abstract data model, the only way to see if it's equivalent to another literal in the abstract data model is to jump in the lexical space and do the comparison. If we do not specify how to do that, if we do not specify a standard way of converting to lexical form, you can't do that conversion.
Otherwise, you have you need de-entailment that actually compares the object forms. But at the base level of RDF equivalent, the comparison is on literal form.
There is also a lexical to value mapping, so you can also compare the values.
How do you compare the values without jumping into lexical space? A comparison requires you. I mean. You can compare them in the abstract sense, but I don't think it's not very useful to implementers.
Well, but that's not something we have to specify. That's something an RDF software.
I think that at the base level, that is not an expectation of RDF processors, because that's equivalent to saying that you can only do de-entailment. So when generating RDF, given that we have we're dealing with a native representation, it's not possible to maintain any input lexical form. Therefore, I think we have to mandate that the output form is being, and here it said normal form C.
But yeah, that's just Unicode stuff.
That's true.
That has nothing to do with the canonical lexical.
No, you're right. That's general.
Here's the other question. What's the downside with specifying this?
It restricts implementations, it adds complexity, and it's done at the wrong layer, I would say.
So it's not really that complex. Like, I don't think that any developer is going to look at it and not be able to implement it. Compared to something.
In fact, we have the code for JavaScript right there. You can cut and paste it. So I don't know the complexity is that big of a deal. I think the restriction is actually a positive one because it encourages interoperability.
Mm.
What was the third reason?
It's done at the wrong layer.
There's an argument to say that the other layer doesn't actually specify how to do it. It's just, it's very hand-wavy. Like, the it seems like the RDF concepts layer is very hand-wavy about what's going on. And it really requires the human in the loop to actually figure out if two things are equivalent. It's something that a machine couldn't do.
They're also not dealing with the conversion.
Graph isomorphism is about?
Now, graph isomorphism is a solvable problem. It's something that you can point a machine at and say whether two things are equivalent, but in order to solve the graph isomorphism problem, you have to map the value space into lexical space to do the comparison. And if there's not an instruction on how to do that, you cannot. Graph isomorphism then becomes a human-only problem. It's something that a machine can't solve. So to solve the graph isomorphism problem, you have to be able to convert these values into lexical form.
Yes, and since that's done in RDF, RDF concepts has to explain that they're not JSON-LD the spec, in my opinion, but...
Yeah, but the RDF concept spec doesn't know anything about converting these values to and from native JSON numbers. So it does seem like it sort of falls into our arena.
I'm wondering if we should just add an agenda item to the RDF call tomorrow to discuss this.
Sure, we can do that. I feel like it might blow up, but that's yeah.
Well, I don't think it's going to blow up, but I just think that this is an issue that can be deferred.
Well, we have to have some kind of.
Well, what I mean is it can be deferred to that group because it really is about the RDF model that were the abstract syntax that is the result of the conversion and what the requirements for creating that syntax are.
So here's a suggestion. If we take a position in this group, we can take that position to the RDF working group and say, this is what we think we should do. What does the RDF working group think? Rather than making it a big open-ended discussion in the RDF working group.
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole reason why we're having this discussion is because we have something in the spec, and Sandro, which is basically the RDF working group, isn't happy with it.
Well, Sandro is not happy with it. I don't think the RDF working group knows that we even have this text in there.
Yeah, but what are we proposing then? The same text that we currently have, basically?
No, I guess what we're doing is we're specifying. Here's the proposal. So specify what canonical lexical form is for XSD integer and XSD double by referencing the XML schema 1.1 data type spec. When processors are generating output, they're required to use this form.
Yeah, that's exactly what we currently have in the spec.
We reference the XML schema 1.1 data type spec?
Yes.
Okay, well.
It sounds to me like what we're talking about is just instead of typing it out in our spec, just to reference it and be done with it. Is that valid, or...?
Well, the argument against that was that we didn't want JSON LD developers to have to read the whole XML schema specification. So we just paraphrased that.
So reference just give a direct reference to the section, saying, hey, look at section 5.1.3.2.1.8.9. For the actual verbiage.
Yeah, but the problem is still the same. It's whether we require the canonical lexical form or whether we don't do that.
So I think the vast majority of this group thinks that we should.
Well, we can just have a vote on the proposal, right? And then take that to the RDF group and say that that's, you know, we can, right. We can bring the concerns over there and see what they have to say.
Mm-hmm. think Nicholas. Oh no, there's Nicholas is still there. Okay, all right, that's resolved. We are 23 minutes over. We ended up having a 90-minute call anyway. Anything? I know that we had something else that we needed to discuss on this data types discussion, but we're out of time for today.
Well, I think one quick thing we could discuss would be using a normative reference to RDF concepts versus an informative reference. We were asked to use normative references along with the other RDF documents that are coming out,
which makes sense to me. But do we need to? What do we reference normatively?
In my opinion, we... Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
Well, what I understand from what Marcus is saying is it's the only reference is an informative section. Therefore, a normative reference is required. I think Dave Wood's point was that this is an RDF working group publication, and if we don't normally reference our own documents, that seems like a problem. So I can see the reasoning behind that.
Well, I mean, if you don't have a normative reference, why do you... You see what I'm saying? Like, why don't we reference other documents at the W3C that normatively?
It's not because they're W3C documents. It's because they're publications coming out at the same time from the same working group.
Right, but I guess my question is why is the larger set of W3C specs that are being worked on right now that are going to RAC less important than the ones that the RDF working group are working on when the JSON-LD spec doesn't need to refer to any of them in a normative way?
Well,
I understand the argument for political reasons of we are, the RDF working group is working on these specs, and it creates a better sense of kind of usage for the RDF concept specs if many more specifications refer to them.
Well, okay, this is a little bit different because we are in one aspect of us, and certainly the primary interest from the working group is that we are a RDF serialization format. And every other RDF serialization format has and must have a normative reference to RDF concepts because that's the basis upon which they all operate. So if we are also taken in that light without a normative reference to RDF concepts, it's not clear that what we are actually doing is being an RDF syntax.
Okay, that's more compelling of an argument to me.
But another difference to other serialization formats is that they don't define their own data model, and that's the reason why they reference RDF concepts in the first place.
Yeah, but that's a big bone of contention, obviously, with the group, that we don't need to inflame.
What is the drawback for us referencing it normatively?
We can't go to RAC.
None of them are good. We're all going to have that issue with it was going to RAC simultaneously.
We're in the same group. Yeah, we're in the same group, so I don't know that it really matters, right?
If RDF concepts doesn't go to RAC, then I don't think that we're going to be able to either if we're relying upon anything that is in there.
Well, I guess we could take the normative reference out at the point that it becomes clear that RDF concepts isn't going to RAC. But again, I don't think that that's likely at all. I think in all likelihood, RDF concepts will go to RAC before any of these other documents go to RAC. So that's fine. I mean, I'm fine with putting a normative reference in.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to correct it if we need to change it. So let's just do that and avoid the contention.
Okay. Anything else we need to discuss before we go?
Just a reflection upon the sort of in the middle of the night confused response I had to your tool in the JSON-LD RDFA conversion thing. Because I think it would be interesting. I hope that I will have a bit more time now in the coming months to sort of converge on trying to use your JSON-LD implementation and see if we could define a JavaScript-based package, both as a Node.js tool, as you already have the workings of, and the package it so that it's easy to use in browsers chopping it up a bit and then looking at adding even other serializations. So I think it's interesting to look at working on data you read in from RDF sources, be it RDFA or Turtle or JSON-LD, in memory as JSON-LD, perhaps via Connect if we move forward with that eventually. So just to mention that idea, it looks good. That's a good basis.
Cool, great, yeah, absolutely. We'd love to work with you on that.
Yeah, I'll try to make more time now.
Okay.
Great.
All right, that's the call for today. Thanks, everyone, for the great discussion, as always. And then, Marcus, Greg, I guess we'll see you on the RDF call tomorrow. For the rest of you, have a great week, and we'll chat next week.
All right.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.